I'll find it right now. I'll see if
front
it's
AO3.
If there's any Battlefield fanfiction, I will.
Battleship.
Did I say Battlefield?
Field, yeah.
Which I'm sure there is, like the video game series.
If I find any Battleship fanfiction, I will kill myself.
Diving out the window right now.
What if it's like, I made this Battleship 2012 AU fanfic where they all work at a cafe?
I mean, it's going to be like Clemens and Rihanna or something dumb like that.
Oh my god. No, nobody ships straight people. That's like...
Yeah, what's the point?
It's just not something people do. 25 fanfics.
Damn.
For
R.I.P. Delahanty.
8 of them are Alex Hopper, Nagata, Yugi.
Great.
Great.
2 of them are Alex Hopper and Stone Hopper.
No!
Means it's not sex. It's
just a pairing.
They're just in there.
It's okay. Like
a story about the two of them.
A story focused on their relationship.
Sure, got it. Okay.
Wow. Yeah.
2 of them. People really like Hamish Linklater. / Reader.
Who the hell?
Reader as in like, it's you are the...
Oh. I thought there was a character named Reader.
It's for you to read.
Oh, interesting.
And then the next one is Cal Zapata / original female character, which is the next best for Reader.
Who?
Here's my self-insert.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
That's incredible. I'm so glad we looked that up.
And welcome to Why Do We Watch This, the podcast where three friends watch a shitty movie, talk about what they liked, what they didn't like, and how they would fix it, all while enjoying a themed cocktail. I am your host for this episode, Brendan, stupid nincompoop idea Drischler.
I am Lee, imposed will, Delahanty.
And I'm Chris, I'm freaking saving you, Ravel.
And as you can clearly tell by those hot lines of dialogue, things that all the kids were saying back in the summer of 2012, the movie that we just watched is 2012's Battleship, directed by Peter Berg, came out, as I said, in 2012, starring Taylor Kitsch, Alexander Skarsgård, Rihanna, Brooklyn Decker, and Liam Neeson. This movie is wrapping up our summer of games with a fairly notorious piece of shit game movie, I would say. A movie that flopped very hard, lost a lot of money, and a movie that no one liked. So
I also just wanted to say, I feel like the movie flopped in a way that almost memory hold it.
It did, yeah.
Because I feel like it is not discussed.
No.
Or like thought of these days.
Well, really. I mean, I think the thing is also is you remembered as just a movie that sort of sunk a lot of people's careers, you know?
Yeah. Like
you
were, sunk my battleship.
Yes, it sunk their battleships, as it were.
In the case of Taylor Kitsch, it was a real 1-2 punch between that and John Carter.
And Savages.
John forgot Carter about
all
Savages.
The same year.
John Carter was at least fun, though.
Yeah. I like John Carter.
I have no issue with that, but you cannot deny that movie bombed.
Yeah.
And is a large part of why his career stalled and take off.
Yeah, and I mean, Rihanna has clearly decided not to act anymore, which, like, good for her for realizing, you know, her strengths lie elsewhere.
At least she came and smoked weed in that Ocean's 8 movie.
That's true. I forgot she was in Ocean's 8. She was fun in that.
Yeah.
Like, a small, you know, maybe that's what she needs to do, small parts.
You know, that movie gets a lot of flack, but I thought it was fun.
I enjoyed it. It's not as good as any of the other Ocean's movies, but it was good. Anyways, we ain't talking about the Ocean's movies yet.
We're talking about something that happened in an ocean.
Yes, that is true. This is Ocean's 5, and by Ocean's 5, I mean the 5 ships in Battleship. The drink that we made to accompany our viewing of Battleship is called a paper battleship. It was 0.75 cups of honey bourbon, 0.75 cups of Amaro Nonino, 0.75 cups of Aperol, 0.75 cups of lemon juice, and sea salt. It's a very easy drink to make because it's just equal parts of everything. So you can scale it up or scale it down. But the thing about this is it's a slushy. So what you do is you mix all the ingredients except for the salt in a mason jar with a lid and store in the freezer overnight. Before serving, add a dash of sea salt and stir mixture gently until slushy. Pour it into a coupe glass and drink. Now, the only slight problem we had with this drink is that I was carrying it from my apartment to Lee's apartment, despite carrying it in a freezer bag
with multiple
cold packs. It still was kind of a liquid by the time I got here. And even after being in Lee's freezer for almost the entirety of Battleship, it was still mostly just a liquid by the time I poured it out.
Did you add the salt at your house?
I did. But the thing is, you would think, right? But I added the salt like 2 nights ago and it was still frozen when I left. Because I too thought that if I added the salt, that might negatively affect its ability to, you know, hold its frozen shape.
Maybe if you never added the salt and added it in here.
It's possible. I think what it really just is that, as we all know, alcohol has a tendency to not freeze.
Exactly,
so for this to have gotten slushy in the first place, it was in our freezer overnight.
Yeah.
I think honestly what I should have done is I should have brought it last night, kept it in your freezer, and then we had it today.
I think that would have been the move, because I think it's very just likely that it just needed to be in there overnight to keep its consistency.
Right. And so that was unfortunate. I had hoped the freezer bag would kind of do the trick.
But you're not far, so if it just made like this, you might as well feel free to come over earlier or me do it.
Do I need to go back to Brookline Ice and Coal and get some dry ice?
Yes. Chris, if you could have found
Brookline
some more dry
ice and coal.
That's what it's called.
The fact that we had to go to some place that's
called Brooklyn Ice and Coal.
And I remember going there and they were like, well, how much do you want? I'm like, I don't know, what's the smallest amount? They're like, one pallet. And a pallet in that case, but it was, I don't know, like a large grocery bag.
No, it was.
Size.
It was a large amount.
Full of potato sack full of dry ice.
That was a unique experience I will never forget.
That was one of our most ambitious attempts, I think, and it paid off.
My backpack frost over. It frosted itself.
Hey, Chris, frost yourself. Anyways, so the paper battleship. What did we all think of the paper battleship?
Okay, I really liked it. I love paper planes, so this was always going to be a layup for me. I can throw them back, no problem. And this isn't necessarily a bad thing. It is potent.
Yeah.
It is potent.
The thing about a paper plane is it's fucking boozy as hell because there's only one component to the drink that is non-alcoholic. So if you have a paper plane, you are drinking a lot of straight alcohol.
Yep.
Yeah, if you've ever seen the Tim and Eric sketch with Paul Rudd where he's like at the computer and he's all the different guys. And then when he first like asks to see nude Tane and he's like, oh God, that's pretty much like the face I made when I took a first sip of this. I was like, oh.
Well, because it...
Yeah, because
it kicks the door down.
Yeah,
I'm drinking like booze light gin and tonics at best these days. Like on a very slim occasion, I have no need or funds really to be going out drinking at fancier places.
Sure.
And I don't really see the point much of drinking just of a night because I just don't know. It just doesn't. I'd rather have like a night or a more refreshing beverage like iced tea, something that feels hydrating. Alcohol doesn't feel hydrating.
No,
because it ain't. Yeah.
Yeah, this is the most potent drink I've had in a while. And I was like,
same.
I took like a bigger sip than I thought than I should have, really, because I was like not really sure what I was drinking. And I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
No. All of that said,
but it's really good.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I thought flavor balance wise was fantastic. I love that little bite of salt at the end.
Yeah, no, it was
really nice.
So, right, if you're doing a normal, Rich and I have done this recipe many times in the past, and the only difference is that we used regular bourbon, not honey bourbon, and we didn't use sea salt. And I thought the sea salt would be a nice, like, nautical thing to add. And the honey bourbon was just, well, I have this lying around. I might as well see what it does to the flavor. So this is something I'm pretty used to drinking. And yeah, let me tell you, it affects you very
quickly.
I love
that you guys are just making paper planes around the house. That's great.
Well, the slush. Specifically,
yeah,
we have a mason jar in the freezer of just that.
Really?
Yeah. The only downside is Amar Nino is expensive. So anyway, that was the paper battleship. Now, to get into the plot of the movie Battleship Christopher, would you kindly elucidate us?
I sure will. I just wanted to say, I skimmed this. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of details that I do not recall being in the movie.
Great.
Maybe I just missed them and you guys will... But, okay. In 2005, potentially habitable planet G is discovered, and in 2006, a communications array to reach any extraterrestrial life is built on Oahu. There, a slacking Alex Hopper is arrested while attempting to impress Samantha Sam Shane, daughter of Admiral Terrence Shane. Just want to point out, guys, just in case you're wondering, every time you hear someone's military rank, it's hyperlinked. Alex's brother, Commander Stonehopper, furiously forces Alex to join the United States Navy. 6 years later, Alex is a lieutenant aboard the USS John Paul Jones and in a relationship with Sam, a physical therapist working with wounded veterans. While Stone is a model officer commanding the USS Sampson, the rebellious Alex, despite showing plenty of potential, is facing disciplinary discharge. During the 2012 RIMPAC exercise, five alien spacecraft arrive. Their communication ship hits a satellite and crashes through the Bank of China Tower in Hong Kong, while the others plunge into the waters off the coast of Hawaii. Sampson, John Paul Jones, and the Japanese destroyer JDS Miyoko discover a floating structure that generates an impenetrable force field, isolating the Hawaiian Islands and the three destroyers from the rest of the world, and jamming all radar and communications inside. Three alien warships surface, and first contact devolves into a battle after the humans decide to fire fire a warning shot across the alien's bow. The Miyoko is destroyed, Samson is lost with all hands, including Stone, and John Paul Jones's command personnel are killed, leaving Alex to reluctantly take charge as the next highest-ranking sailor on board after the executive officer is also lost. It's really badly written, guys. John Paul Jones disengages to recover Miyoko's survivors, including Captain Yuji Nagata, while alien drones destroy Oahu's military bases. Hiking near the communications array, Sam and retired States Army Lieutenant Colonel and double amputee Mick Canales discover the alien presence. They encounter scientist Cal Zapata, who reveals the aliens have taken over the array to reestablish communications with their home planet. The John Paul Jones crew captures an alien who telepathically shows Alex images of alien conflict and planetary destruction. More aliens board and retrieve their comrade, while one starts sabotaging the ship. Its armored suit proves impervious to small arms fire, but it is obliterated by the destroyer's 5-inch gun, and the captured alien's helmet reveals their eyes are hypersensitive to sunlight. Ashore, Sam, Mick, and Cal recover his spectrum analyzer, using it to radio John Paul Jones that the aliens will contact their planet and most likely call for reinforcements when the facility's satellite is in position in 4 hours. As night falls, Hopper realizes they have no visibility. Nagata suggests using the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA's, tsunami warning buoys around Hawaii to track the warships without radar. This plan works and allows John Paul Jones to destroy the two of them. The third proves too elusive, so they lure it into facing east as the sun rises. Alex and Nagata shoot out its bridge windows with sniper rifles, blinding its crew with sunlight and allowing John Paul Jones to destroy it. The destroyer then attempts to target the communications array, but is sunk by drones launched from the alien structure emitting the force field. Alex, Nagata, and several other sailors barely escape. The survivors commandeer the decommissioned World War II battleship, the USS Missouri, with the aid of retired Navy veterans. The floating structure is revealed to be a gigantic mothership, but Missouri disables the force field, allowing Admiral Shane to scramble fighter jets from the aircraft carrier USS Ronald Reagan. The battleship's turret carrying the ship's last shell is disabled, forcing the sailors to carry the shell by hand to the ship's last functioning turret. Sam, Mick, and Cal stall the aliens at the array, where Mick kills an alien soldier. Alex uses the final shell to destroy the array, rendering the Missouri defenseless, but the mothership's drones are destroyed by Royal Australian Air Force FA-18 fighter jets as reinforcements carpet bomb the mothership, eliminating the alien threat. Don't remember that detail.
I don't remember them being Australian.
I don't either. Okay. Alex is promoted to lieutenant commander and presented with a silver star and his brother's posthumous Navy Cross. Admiral Shane promises Alex will soon have a ship of his own, while he is also recommended to become a Navy SEAL. I don't know how that would work. Alex asks him for Sam's hand in marriage. The Admiral initially refuses, but invites Alex to lunch.
Aww.
In a post-credit scene, three boys in a repairman in Scotland are scared off by an alien that emerges from a crash pod.
Oh.
I missed that?
I saw it the first time. You missed nothing, first of all. Because I looked online and saw that there was a scene. It's the dumbest fucking scene ever. It's literally just like a piece of garbage washes up. A bunch of kids are like, ooh, what's in it? A door opens. They run away and you see an alien inside.
Oh.
To what effect? How did it get to Scotland from Hawaii? Couldn't tell you. That's quite a sail, if you ask me.
So, crashes in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And then what?
Sails through the Panama Canal.
She goes to the Panama Canal,
yep.
Unseen.
Yep. They just let it through. They wave it on through
and
like
then
hey, garbage.
Just goes literally straight across the Atlantic, but
up to Scotland.
North.
Yeah, up to
like
Scotland.
Like northeast.
Yeah, and just crashes out there for a while.
So
what?
Why did the ship, something crashes into Hong Kong?
Right. By accident. My understanding is, so this is my understanding. That was their communication ship. For whatever reason, it
that
accidentally like hits Hong Kong.
So
somehow.
They sent a communication ship and some sort of like forward scouting military force?
I get, right, like a communication ship and like four actual alien battleships.
I mean, they're battleships to some extent, right? Like, they were clearly like the Vanguard or something, but they were quite heavily armed.
Right, no, it is, admittedly, you would think
but it's,
that...
it's not an in full invading force.
Right,
no.
That's the, like, you would think it would either be a couple of scouts or it would be a full force instead of a few battleships, you know?
Yeah.
It's just strange to kind of do it half-assed,
it's
but
a,
then
it's
again...
A, the thing is, if you're scouting, you want to be inconspicuous.
Right.
And if you're...
launching
if
an attack.
Don't have a full... like an army to invade, then you don't want to like I don't know, give people time to...
Right, you don't want to, like, alert the military to your presence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, these aliens are...
These bums are playing the lazy game.
Couple of things. I'm just going to quickly let everyone know about cast.
Yeah, give us some cast.
I honestly think it would be simpler to just refer to them by their actor names.
I'm sure it will. Well, except for Chris Stonehopper.
Oh, so sorry. Commander Stonehopper.
Yeah, later we're going to go down to the Jamaica Pond and do some stone hopping.
Taylor Kitsch as Alex Hopper, Alexander Skarsgård as Commander Stonehopper, Rihanna as Gunner's mate, second class Cora Rakes. I did not realize we ever got her first name.
I don't know that we did.
I heard Rakes a lot.
I heard Rakes a lot, too.
Yeah, but it's probably from the credits.
It's or like in the screenplay or some shit. Yeah.
Brooklyn Decker as Samantha Shane, Tadanobu Asano as Captain Nagata, Liam Neeson as Admiral Terrence Shane, Hamish Linklater as Cal Zapata, Jesse Plemons as Bosun's mate, Seaman Jimmy Ordy Ord.
It just sounds like the Swedish chef or something.
Ordy Ord. His last name is Ord, but his nickname is Ordy.
They make his nickname longer than his actual name.
John Twee as Chief Petty Officer Walter Beast Lynch. I don't know.
You're probably...
Adam Godley as Dr. Nagardi, who's kind of a exposition machine.
Right.
Peter McNichol as the U.S. Secretary of Defense. Fine.
I had no idea.
So.
I know
who
he's
so.
Who's the beefy sort of like Hawaiian guy?
I think that's Beast, right? What do you Beast. Say? It was John Tuohy, was that?
John Tuohy.
Yeah.
Beast is, yeah.
He's
I think
like an engineer or something.
Yeah. He is, according to the credits, Chief Petty Officer. I don't know what that means.
I don't really know what that means. I think it should be fair to state that I don't have a great understanding of the Navy.
Neither do I. I don't necessarily have the deepest understanding of American military ranks and what all the positions mean.
Same.
This movie definitely does have the vibe of we teamed up with the U.S. military to make some, like, lightly propagandized.
I know what a bosun is.
A bosun is typically, like...
They're like a quartermaster.
It's spelled boatswain.
Yeah, but it's
well, no,
bosun.
Not
yeah.
only in England in weird times. Nowadays, it is just B-O-S-U-N.
Yeah, but they'll still spell it as boatswain sometimes.
Yeah. I've
no,
seen,
not
I've,
modern times.
I've seen both. But, I've seen both.
In England, maybe, but not in America.
Nah.
Right, well, regardless, I believe, aren't bosuns, like...
They're quartermasters.
Yeah, but bosuns are...
They handle supplies.
They're right, I was going to say, it's less of, like, a fighting position and more of, like, an administrative, almost, or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm being reductive, I'm sure, but...
So before we jump in, I just wanted to quick stat out there.
You want to jump out?
I want to jump out. The budget is estimated to be somewhere between 209 and 220 million.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any guesses about the neighborhood of what it grossed?
I would guess enough. Two. I would guess around two.
You're guessing
200?
Two?
Yeah, 200.
I don't know numbers.
Yeah.
Absolute total was 303 million.
I mean, that's more than I thought, but certainly an expensive movie. And that's also assuming, again, that it actually cost that amount, and that's not just, you know, studios fudging numbers, too.
Well, it says here, at least, mm-hmm. I mean, Wikipedia, not a perfect source, but it lost Universal and Hasbro 150 mil. The wording makes it unclear whether or not that's combined or
right.
Each,
the only thing that I guess I'm a little surprised about is that Hasbro somehow lost money on this, because to me... I would have assumed that the agreement, and again, this is speaking out of nothing, is that the agreement would have been, we are licensing your property and we are giving you a pile of money in order to do it. But I don't know how that works, to be fair. So my thought would be that in the scheme of things, Hasbro probably didn't really lose anything at all. Hasbro is the one party who walked away from this with money because of a, you know, agreement they would make with Universal. They didn't lose shit. All the actors and the director had a big, you know, black mark against them. Universal lost a crap ton of money, but Hasbro probably walked away being like, I don't know, people know Battleship, right? People remember Battleship.
Was Hasbro going to make like
other
fucking toys of those of the fucking Beyblade
potentially, right?
So the one thing that I know is that while they didn't make toys per se, Hasbro did do a couple of Battleship games that were themed to this movie.
Ew.
Where it was like one side was an alien side and one side was a military.
Yeah.
But I think it was the same rules of play.
Right, no, it wasn't. I don't think it was a different game. I think it was just like a reskinned version of the game, basically.
They didn't even add any mechanics. That's bullshit.
I know, right? Yeah. You think like...
Like Leapfrog?
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, like, you think like the fun thing to do would be like the alien side can like move their ships like three pegs per turn or some shit like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, fuck it. Why not? But this was also, I mean, you guys remember surely at the time when, like, post-Transformers, so Hasbro was really big on, what else can we make? What else can we do?
Yeah.
So, you know, there was talk of a Monopoly movie for a while. Adam Sandler was doing a Candyland movie for a while. Yeah, I know.
I did not know that.
Yeah. It obviously never happened, but...
This happens every time, right? Like, after Barbie was such a huge success, Mattel, I think, was like, oh, we're going to do a Polly Pocket movie now.
Right. No, I mean, it's always like that, right? It's like once one of these movies hits, then the company is like, we have all these other properties
too. We need to recreate
ergo,
this.
Right. That one made money. Ergo, everything else we own will make money too.
It's
so.
Like how apparently now, because of the huge success of Obsession and Backrooms, it's being forecasted the studios are going to start rating YouTube creators.
I'm sure they will. Next.
Because they're cheap, right?
Yeah,
you don't
right,
have to pay
exactly.
a lot of money.
I'm sure, yeah, we'll get a lot of verticals as movies now.
Fine.
Part of why Backrooms was cheap isn't because like they got a 20-year-old to direct it, which they did.
Yeah,
but it's because Backrooms doesn't cost money because nobody owns it.
Right,
right, and also it's relatively minimal in terms of what you need to do for
yeah.
it. It's like obviously
yeah.
there's a lot of set construction involved, but in the scheme of things,
and,
that's
and
not
now,
that much.
There's like already been one sort of like shitty attempted lawsuit. Because A24 is going shitty now.
Yeah, they really...
Where they're trying to, like, claim that one of the Backroom Steam games is, like, a copyright claim against their movie, and it's like, no?
Yeah. I thought...
No, the game came out before the movie?
Yeah.
And nobody owns Backroom?
I thought they had, like, backed down a little bit, but it's like the damage is already done at this point.
The damage is done,
right.
Yeah, because where it's like, why... You can't suddenly own Backroom is because you made a movie out of a thing
right.
that nobody owns.
Exactly. And I had also heard that... Who's the guy who directed Backrooms? I'm legitimately...
Kate Parsons.
Yeah, thank you. He's like, being courted by other studios now
mm-hmm.
because, you know, A24 has kind of stepped in a bit with their pro-AI agenda and that
yeah,
whole
yeah.
lawsuit.
And getting
so,
bought by the Kushners,
right.
basically.
So they're really trying to you know, pull him away from that, and you know, I mean, there it is. What can you do? That's what happens.
Yeah,
you act like an asshole.
For what
get
it's
fucked.
Worth, I am appreciative that Kane Parsons has been very loudly anti-AI.
Yeah, same.
So anywho,
so yeah, so that is Battleship. So let me ask you guys something. Do you have any affinity whatsoever for the game of Battleship?
I played it.
Was
as
it anything you ever played?
We had it in my house as a kid.
I enjoyed Battleship.
I enjoyed it. We played. I don't know that it lives on in my mind as like a really important game to me
sure.
necessarily, but I did play it and enjoy it.
For me, it was one of the few games that my mom's parents had as board games, and I'm sure it was the same set that my mom had as a child
sure.
or something.
Was it like wooden
just
or something?
It wasn't wooden, but it was just like a very base plastic, you know, like a very basic bitch plastic. So it was like that and Booby Trap. Did you ever play Booby Trap?
No.
I don't know how to describe it, but it's a very it's a very simple, straightforward game, but mm-hmm. I remember playing it at their house. I associate Battleship as the thing you play with because it's the only option that you have
mm-hmm.
at a place where there are no toys for you to play with as a child.
Mm-hmm.
So like, and that's my own mental baggage toward Battleship.
Honestly, it kind of fits with this movie though.
Yeah, that's true.
This is all we have. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this is what you get. I don't know what else to tell you. It's Battleship,
yeah.
guys. I feel like a lot of people, when this movie was first announced, the reaction, understandably perhaps, was people being like, are you fucking kidding me? A movie about Battleship. To an extent,
mm-hmm.
I get that. On the other hand, you're kind of wide open for anything. If a studio hands you a bag of money and says, we want a movie based on Battleship, you've got a lot of options to go for, right? All you need to effectively do is it has to somehow be about some kind of naval
mm-hmm.
battle. That's all you've got. And if that's all you want to do, you can kind of take that in any fucking direction that you want. So in a way, I get that it sounds ridiculous on paper, but on the other hand, to me, in theory, there's no reason why this shouldn't work. You
right.
know, if you were to just make a straightforward submarine conflict movie a la, you know, Hunt for Red October or something like that, that's your movie right there. And my understanding is that initially, Peter Berg, the director, that's why he was attracted to this, is because he wanted to do a naval battle movie, but was like, well, there's no way for a studio to give me a lot of money to make this
mm-hmm.
because no one would spend that much money on just a straightforward Navy movie. But if I say that it's a Battleship movie, then they can start throwing money. And then I think where things get complicated is when you say, there's aliens now.
Yeah.
I don't know where the aliens came from. I don't know if the aliens came from him, from the studio, from Hasbro, who it was who thought that aliens would be a good choice for this movie. Because to me, again, the most base level thing you could do here is just, I'm making a movie about a naval conflict. There are battleships, there are submarines, there are carriers, all that shit that you remember from the game.
Yeah.
And it's just going to be a lot of that. The aliens are the things that I think really starts to make me question the decisions that are being made
mm-hmm.
about this movie.
In my opinion, the most exciting thing about Battleship in a game
uh-huh.
perspective is like hunting down the opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And like trying to like find out where the mystery enemy is. But in a movie, I think the more exciting thing in a movie is having to sneak past enemy storylines. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think I agree with, I mean, because, yeah, so is what you're saying basically, that main aspect of Battleship the Game, where you don't know where the enemy is and you're trying to hit them, is not necessarily an inherently cinematic thing to do in a movie, because you don't want to just see a person sitting in a chair for 30 minutes being like, I think you're here, launch there, they're not there. Or maybe they're here.
I don't know how you make this exciting in a movie where it's like, there's like 1 to 5 ships that we need to shoot down.
Right.
And we're just going to like sit here and think about where they might be. And I guess try to find out where they are and shoot them.
Right, fire blindly.
As opposed to like, we need to sneak some intelligence past or do something. And we need to like sail through undetected. How are we going to do that?
Right.
That is like the more, that's like an underdoggy perspective where you're like the hunted versus the hunter.
Yeah.
And it's more actual kinetic action to it, where you have to get from point A to point B.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like there's more possibilities of like, why are you trying to do this versus like, well, we have to kill the enemy.
Right. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah. No, I get you.
It wouldn't feel good in a movie to be from that perspective, because what you want to see is like guys shooting. But also, again, in the Hunt for Red October scenario, you want to be the sub that's trying to hide and not get caught.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. You have that part in the movie. There's the one kind of brief, I don't know, 7 minute or so scene where they're actually kind of playing Battleship as we understand it as the board game, where they're using the buoys to triangulate the position based on water displacement of where these alien ships might be. And in the movie, it feels like this scene is only 7 minutes long because they kind of realize that this is not very exciting. Kind of relates to what Lee said. The ships start moving toward the American ship almost immediately, because I think they realize that, again, if it were just 20 minutes of a character sitting in a chair being like, I think they're there.
Fire.
No, they're not there. Maybe they're here. Oh, we hit part of it. Let's shoot there again. So they need to immediately add the action aspect of these ships are coming straight toward you in a line. So now you still have to do the whole battleship, hit this quadrant, but you have to base it on where you think they're going to be en route to you.
When Captain Nagata was like, put the grid up on the radar, I was like, ah, oh, come on!
Like, I talked about this when we were watching it, but like, already an existing part of a movie that is probably arguably more like Battleship is the scene in Tomorrow Never Dies where they have to shoot at the stealth boat and they don't know where it is because it's invisible to radar and it's dark, I guess.
there's a lot of stretches being made in that scene.
It's a huge ship, and it would be easy to detect a massive black shape against a night sky.
Right. Exactly. But in theory, if we take the rules of this universe, it's sacrosanct.
Yeah.
Sure.
Hard to see. And so they have to like, as the admiral of the Navy or whatever says, like, we have to take pot shots at it. And they're just, like, sort of randomly firing where they think it might be.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's already more Battleship-like.
Right.
Where it's like, we don't actually know where the ship is, but we know it's doing something bad and we gotta shoot it down. But again, it's not that exciting to watch.
That is the problem, right? I mean, if you're going to incorporate that aspect of the game Battleship into a movie, you can't do it for more than a couple minutes because the audience is going to start getting bored very quickly just sitting there watching a guy calling out letters and numbers while you fire missiles and say you hit it or you didn't hit it and all that sort of shit. So, you know, I get why that's not more of the movie. But on the other hand, it's like this is the only thing you have aside from the alien missiles looking like the Battleship pegs that directly seems to call back to the game.
I will say, though, props for creativity in using something that is real in our world. Like, NOAA tsunami buoys are, like, a real thing.
Yeah.
That was, like, one bit where I was like, oh, okay.
No, I agree with you. I think that was kind of a clever way to adapt the Battleship game grid into a cinematic.
It's just, to do it at all feels silly.
No, it does.
In when you're surrounding it with this deadly serious, well, for the most part, pretty serious military.
Right, I mean, they do, drama. Characters do say at several points, like, oh no, this is an extinction level event. The aliens are going to wipe us out. There will be more of them. Look at all the damage they did with 5 ships. If they came back with more, then we're all fucking dead. So, you know, it's a goofy movie, but the movie is trying to convey to you that there are stakes here. You know, there are severe stakes here. So, yeah, I get it.
Yeah, I mean, there are stakes, but my problem with the movie and it being aliens is that you still have to, like, explain to me, like, sort of why I care about what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's, like, beyond the fact that it's, like, oh, I guess humanity is facing maybe an existential threat, but it's, like, we talked about a lot during this movie, the lore of what's going on with the aliens is confusing and weird.
Well, yeah. And it's barely there.
And not explained.
Let's talk about the aliens, because I do want to talk about the aliens.
Yeah.
Let's go into that.
Instead of, outside of some very basic traits, invertebrates weak to sunlight.
Yeah.
Because they apparently have like reptile eyes.
Yeah, super sensitive reptile eyes.
And that's it, kind of. Well, that's like, what we know about them. But then it's like, no. Don't worry about these world building details. Don't worry about what the deal with the aliens is. We're just telling you how high the stakes are. So that's why you know it's serious.
Yeah. To compare two scenarios. A scenario in which, like, we're in a Cold War with a nation and that nation has one of their subs in our air / navy space,
right,
or whatever
fuck.
Ooh, it didn't need to be there, but ooh, it can't get discovered and we don't know why it's there. Mm-hmm. And like, this is really tense and things could go really bad depending on how this works out. And we have a really tense and deep history that we all as people sort of naturally understand because mm-hmm. we're all educated in this and we all live in this world. Versus like, aliens are here and they want ? And right. they are destroying things ? But not people ?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That was so cute.
Yeah.
Why are they here? And
right.
And what are their purposes? And what are they trying to do other than, I guess, they're bad?
I mean, the movie literally cribs from Independence Day in that one scene where they have the alien that they fished out of the water on the boat and they pull off the helmet and it suddenly, you know, snaps back into consciousness and sticks its hand on Taylor Kitsch's forehead. And Taylor Kitsch has a psychic vision of all the aliens coming and things exploding and them taking over the world, which, again, is literally something that happens in Independence Day with Bill Pullman's character.
I thought it was a vision of its home world.
I think it's supposed to be a vision of, like, what they're going to do. I think it's supposed to be what they're going to do.
And that would also make sense.
Because I thought he said something to that effect, but I could be confused.
But what does he know? He's an idiot.
No, he is a fucking idiot.
He's no Stonehopper.
No, he's no Stonehopper. He'd be lucky to be a Stonehopper. You sir are no Stonehopper.
You would think if you're going to put us in the perspective of, at one point, they're tech balls. That is where I think the first time we get a look
at
their
red light, green light system.
At their red light, green light system.
You see it briefly. There's a few shots of it briefly prior to that, but that's when you really start to like get a feel for
it. The visors, the helmet visors do it too.
Yeah.
It felt like a very, like a Bobo version of like the RoboCop stuff. It clearly shows at least unarmed people as green.
Yeah.
Right.
But then there's other scenes, like when that warrior wakes up and is chasing Rihanna, she shows up as green on his radar, but he's clearly trying to kill her.
Well, no, that's the thing, she has a gun at one point. She has two guns.
Oh.
And so I don't know if maybe it's supposed to be that she has shot at me once, ergo she is now a threat and I must eliminate her. The thing that I'm more confused by is that after it sees Rihanna and it knocks the guns out of her hands and kind of, you know, decommissions her, then it turns its attention back to Taylor Kitsch, who is still red, meaning that he has to kill him. But I don't know why he has to kill Taylor Kitsch at that point. You know what I mean? Because it's bizarre. It's so fucking bizarre to me. First of all, that these helmets have a kill or do not kill thing in them.
I don't know if that's what it is.
Right.
But with the droids
the
are one of the first time we see it. The shredder drones or whatever the fuck they're called in the Wikipedia. A shredder drone stops in front of a human child.
Right.
Analyzes it.
Right.
Like, ooh, heartbeat.
You stick in that moment for like 20
seconds.
Right.
It takes a minute to like stare it down.
Ooh,
yeah.
Heartbeat.
Right.
Ooh, blood. Ooh, organs. And then flags it green and then like straight up averts from it and decides to go destroy a bridge instead.
Because
right.
the bridge shows up as red. So I thought the implication was maybe it's different with the alien warriors, but at least with these like shredder drones, they're not there to necessarily pursue unarmed like civilians. They're there to, like, take out infrastructure.
Sure, I think that's perfectly valid, but my question to that is sort of, well, why? Why do you care? The thing is...
Exactly, there's a difference between, it's a human, okay, great, I don't give a shit if I destroy it or not, versus it's a human it's an unarmed civilian I have to actively avoid.
Right, I will lose points if I kill the human.
Especially since it all goes to nothing, it doesn't matter. It's not as if there's a moment where they're like,
we realize we're
trying to do X, Y, and Z.
Right, I think, like, it would be one thing if there was a moment where they realize, oh, the aliens have helmets that are telling them to target specific things. If we can figure out what they're not targeting, we know what they will be targeting.
Right.
Ergo, we have to defend the things that they're targeting.
Why even go into red light, green light if it doesn't matter anyway? We're just going to kill them all.
You also have shit like whenever the aliens are taking over those communications satellite, there's the one scene where Cal sneaks in to grab that suitcase and walk out. And he just walks in, picks up the suitcase, an alien turns around and physically sees him
because
he scans
it. Yeah, and it's like, well, I gotta let you out.
Right, and he just sort of, it's played as a joke moment because earlier in the movie, Cal is jiggling his leg very quickly and they're like, stop jiggling your leg, and he's shaking the suitcase and the alien puts his hand on the suitcase to stop from jiggling. Does the alien not know that that's a human? I saw it scanning humans earlier. Either way, why doesn't it just kill him anyway? If you see, like, I'm just saying, if you were, like, an invading force and you saw a person in there, wouldn't you just kill the person anyway?
They're an invading waiting for is he's going to destroy us all. However, on an individual basis, they will not hurt.
Right. No, they're right. They have some issues with face-to-face thing. That's a little awkward for us.
It was so dumb. It meant nothing in the long run. I don't know why we had to go in there into their perspective.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like introducing these weird details about them, but it's like, well, nothing happened.
Right. Yeah. So what point? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like it doesn't help us defeat them in any way. Mm-hmm. Honestly, to me, the red and green thing just confused me more than it helped me, you know, because every time it popped up, I would be like, well, why is it focusing on this thing? Whereas if I had just seen the tech balls come in and take out that bridge, I would have been like, fine, they're taking out the bridge. They have a reason. They have their reasons for taking out this bridge. Fine. Okay, yeah. Let's move on. But the fact that it sees a kid, doesn't attack the kid, pivots and takes out the bridge just makes me start asking questions. Well, why this, not this?
Yeah.
That's what I don't understand at all. It's
deeply confusing. And again, the choice to bring in aliens means that there's no depth in this conflict, which is like...
True.
I guess if it's like a really dumb action movie, you don't necessarily need to care, like, well, what are they fighting for?
And sure.
What are the values here? We're just defeating monsters, right. Whatever. I don't know. The action isn't good enough to justify it being that.
No, my only thought as to the question of why aliens is that Americans need to be the underdog, but they can't be too much of an underdog because obviously this is being made with the active participation of the U.S. military. So they don't want to come off as a bunch of fucking idiots who can't like do shit. So you need a threat that they cannot understand at first. And that's why it's not just, why is it not Korea or something, you know?
That also, guy who does think it's North Korea.
Except for that like lunatic who's like, this has got to be North Korea. It's like, really, guy? You think North Korea is pulling this shit off?
You've already seen this like incomprehensible vessel shoot these like insane
space
like scatter missile things.
Right.
Well, the other bit too that I think is silly is just so many things it has to do to not only recreate the battleship game, but to meet that issue that you're describing. So yes, the American military cannot be too weak, which is why the aliens need to be this kind of like incomprehensibly powerful thing. But also the movie is going to be too difficult to figure out how the humans are going to be on their back foot if the things like the aircraft carrier yes, that wasn't included in the bubble. And I would have to think that if it was, then this actually wraps up a lot faster.
Sure.
Because they can actually, like, harry it from multiple directions in a much more maneuverable
way. Sure, I mean, I mean, like, I think that's just, like, the fictional contrivance that you have to bake into a story for it, too.
It's...
not wrap up very quickly. But I think
it just makes it more confusing then, because I'm like, well, then why did the aliens make a bubble?
I don't understand
that. What did that do for them?
Right, no, you have a point there. I'm not quite sure I understand that. Either,
and
to be fair.
The bubble clearly includes the island where they are...
Includes all of Hawaii.
Yeah,
let's be clear. All of fucking Hawaii is under this bubble.
So, except...
Yeah.
That one part of the Navy that Liam Neeson...
Well, he's on a boat, right? He's... Because they're doing war games, so he's further out in the ocean than there. So he didn't get the bubble. He's outside. He outside the bubble. He not in
the
bubble.
Is the bubble opaque? Can you not see in?
I think he can. But they show...
It looks blue.
Because they show a ship crashing into it and, like, exploding. So we know that you can't...
Go through it.
Right. Or you can't, like, launch missiles into it.
Yeah.
So all you can do is...
It's entirely opaque, but it's not completely transparent.
Okay.
I think it's... I mean, it's like a... It's a minty toothpaste blue sort of thing. Where you can see through it, but it looked blue. You know, this is probably low on the movie's list of sins, but I think the design for the aliens is really fucking stupid. It's just the most... Someone banged this out on day one of pre-production, and Peter Berg was like... That's it.
There it is.
They look like they're humanoid. They have weirder fingers and they have dumb like barnacle beards. Like they look like Davy Jones crewmen.
Barnacles. They're like
urchins or something.
Porcupine.
Yeah.
They look like Yankee.
I was going to say, as Lee pointed out, for any D&D or Baldur's Gate people, they look like Gith.
Yeah. They look like Gith, but yeah, if Gith had like spiny beards.
Did they have four fingers?
I think it's like they had two on one side and two on the other side.
Yeah,
so it was more like
they have like a weirder
kind of
hand where it's like there's two opposable fingers.
Yeah. So yeah,
two sets of opposable fingers,
I believe.
Yeah,
like I believe it's like
two opposable fingers on each hand.
Yes,
right. It's like, well, I think it's four fingers total.
Yeah,
it's like there's two on this side and two on this side.
Yeah,
so it's like a Lego hand, except it splits into two on each side.
Yeah, I think their design is dumb. It's
I think right, their armor, I think, is dumb. It, again, it just looks like Master Chief.
It's also just, it's very generic.
Yeah.
And I feel like this
With respect, it does not look like Master Chief.
I think it looks Master Chief adjacent.
You don't, you haven't seen, you couldn't tell me what Master Chief looked like.
I worked in a Windows store. I could tell you a lot about Master Chief.
There are a number of different types of mech suits that look more like Master Chief than that one.
Okay.
It's just a generic sort of metal suit.
It is, basically. And
Space Marine.
It reminded me a lot of a movie that came out the year before this, Battlefield of Los Angeles, where the aliens had a very, very similar look. I don't know, metal, flat metal plates just sort of laid on top of each other.
I mean, it just seems like the least you can do is give me something new that I haven't seen before, you know?
Which I understand is, you know, difficult.
It is difficult, but like people do it, you know?
If when, you know, you're just trying to make the decisions you needed to make to be able to make your Navy movie, I think maybe making decisions from that mindset means you don't give a shit if the aliens make sense or look good or
not. No, that's certainly true, but
like,
it's just...
I don't even think the standard was there to like try that.
Yeah. No, it just feels like you could have fun with this. You know, their ships are being launched into water. Are they aquatic? Should they look more aquatic in some way than just pasty white guys? Could you do something with their anatomy, with their physiology?
They look like simian.
Yeah, but they also look kind of slimy. So I don't know quite their skin looked kind of like slimy.
They have faces that look like reptile eyes.
Yeah, they do have gecko eyes.
They do look like a simian bone structure.
But yeah, I mean, to be fair, again, I can't make real heads or tails of what like their anatomy suggests about them in terms of what their homeworld would be like, you know?
They make water-faring craft that can fly very short distances.
Right, it leapfrogs.
It's like a water bug.
Which just seems like
skates.
It must be so much energy devoted to making this ship boop out of the water instead of just a ship that stays in the water or a ship that can fly above the water. Instead, they have a ship that mostly stays in the water, but to travel, it'll jump. It just feels like a wildly impractical means of doing things to me. I don't want to tell these aliens how to invade Earth, but that's what I would suggest to them.
Is there any possibility that they put up the bubble not to necessarily... I mean, yes, the reason outside of the movie is so that you can make it like Battleship, but within the aliens' plan... Was that just to cut off the satellite thing so they could communicate with limited interruption?
I guess the ships
that they sent down were there to like protect.
I guess it could. Well, so I think
it was just to cut off the outside world.
But I guess to Chris's question is like, to what point then?
Yeah.
Like, what happens once you take out Hawaii? You have everyone else. In every other military, like, are you just going to sit there with your shield up, twiddling your thumbs?
No, because of the satellite, but they're setting up a blockade so that no one can interfere while they summon the rest of the army.
Sure. So the question I guess would be, if their communication ship hadn't destroyed Hong Kong by accident,
would they have done the bubble or would they not have done the bubble?
Yeah, I truly don't know, right? I mean, again, this is us thinking about this more than anyone involved in the movie has ever thought about this.
Yeah, I think that they probably sent that ship down, the battle-y ships down to, like, secure the satellite array regardless.
Yeah.
But I think that, it was maybe, like, the backup plan of having to use the satellite array directly versus use their communication ship to summon reinforcements. I don't know, again, how it crashed in Hong Kong. That's quite far away from...
No, I know, right? That's a bit... You really were way off on your arrival there.
I would argue maybe it's equidistant. I would say, is that closer than Scotland?
I don't know. The Pacific's a pretty big ocean, so I'm fully not sure, to be honest with you. This is, I guess, something that I guess I just never really think about in most alien invasion movies. But the fact that this movie places so much emphasis on it is what makes me think about it even more. The fact that so much of this movie depends upon the aliens do not have a communication ship, so they want to use the satellite that we use to initially reach out to them to contact their home world to tell them to send reinforcements. Now, most alien movies do not deal with this as a, you know, if you think about almost any other alien invasion movie, at the end of the movie, we defeat the aliens, we good. Nothing else ever happens. I will say, and I have never said you have to hand it to Independence Day Resurgence, but you have to hand it to Independence Day Resurgence a little here, where the premise of the movie is, even though we knocked out those aliens 20 some years ago, we knew that theoretically they would probably come back at some point. Because why wouldn't they, right? You know? So to be fair, that makes perfect sense as a plot point. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense as a plot point that there will be more to come.
Sure.
But the mere fact to me that I find confusing is, even if they don't use our satellite to communicate their home homeworld, won't just after a while the homeworld be like, hey, what happened to those guys? And send down more ships. Like, to me, it feels like at the end of the day, we have accomplished nothing because we just barely managed to knock out the couple of ships they sent. If they come back with more ships, which is something that they keep saying in the movie would be a very bad thing, that seems like it's very bad for us.
Yeah, but they clearly believe that, okay, now that the satellite array is fucked, problem solved.
I guess so.
Well, here's the thing. This is my problem. Mm. Separately, and this maybe leads into an answer to your question.
Sure.
If you're hearing about, like, ooh, fresh planet in my local area ready to invade, and you don't show up with a full invading army immediately,
yeah,
that signals to me that you are not prepared for a full invasion.
That's fair.
If you don't start with the basics, then you're not ready to take the planet over. You're maybe, like, taking a big risk.
Sure.
And again, that's why I thought that the vision that he sends to Taylor Kitsch is a warning, something, like, that's more from the past, a psychic vision of, like, what it's like in their homeworld. They're maybe in the grip of some war, or they're coming out of some war where they're desperate for resources, and this is like a play for survival. They're going to take over a fresh world. So I think maybe this is like a now or never situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
And
we just got to do it.
They have to go for it now. I mean, again, for the humans have no idea of knowing, really, right? They don't know this. But I think if you are humans in this situation, obviously, as soon as you defeat the aliens the first time, regardless of anything else, you're digging deep into that reverse engineering shit. And you're like,
right,
pawing over that alien tech.
Right, what can we make?
As soon as you're like, okay, well, we've been invaded by these guys. The first question is, are they going to come back? Right. So let's, like, learn as much as we can and get ready for that. That's going to happen no matter what. And if you're the aliens, I think that you probably write that off as well. Of like, well, we lost, so now we left all that shit with them.
They're going to figure out, like, what our deal is.
We don't know. We can't guarantee how much they might learn from what we've left with them. So, you know, we have to maybe rethink and either consider delaying our next invasion until we're more prepared, or make educated guesses on how fast we think they are at learning our technology, etc. So I think that either way, it's not like a given that, like, oh, they'll, I mean, maybe it's a given that they might come back someday, but it's not a given that it's like, oh, they're going to come back and own you just again, because it's like, A, humans might learn more, B, it might give the aliens pause. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get you. I just think that if the aliens showed up, say, 6 months from that day, they still have the upper hand on us.
Maybe, but who knows if they are ready again? Like,
yeah, I mean, this feels like it's all things that could be explained by that weird psychic vision that Taylor Kitsch has. If Taylor Kitsch were to clarify coming out of that psychic vision, I have seen what their world is like, and I know that they're less advanced than we may think that they are based on this, and they have less equipment.
It's a bad movie.
Right, yeah, no, I agree. I'm just saying, like,
you think this movie is bad?
Whereas in Independence Day, when he had a bad vision, we shove, like, up against Pullman up against a wall, and he goes,
not Pullman, Brett Spiner.
Pullman is, he just gives Pullman a headache. That's when he like stares Pullman him down headache. And Pullman's like, ah, and then collapses.
That's right.
I think that goes also to the thing you had said earlier, is like, why are they sending 5 ships to do this as opposed to an entire army or like a couple of quiet guys to sort of sneak in and see what the deal is?
I always prefer using a couple of quiet guys.
We all love a quiet guy. Everyone loves a nice quiet guy. It's just, again, Independence Day does this well, where Independence Day shows up with, you know, an entire army of alien ships that start destroying major cities and then working their way to other major cities very quickly and very efficiently. Whereas this one is just like, I don't know, Hawaii. Can we take out Hawaii and see what happens?
Again, I just think it goes back to, I don't think this was the movie Peter Berg initially set out to make.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to say that what he wanted to make would have been so much better. I don't know. I don't really have high estimations of Peter Berg as a director personally, but I just think you can see that lack of interest and that thinness in a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
Who are the aliens? Who gives a fuck? I'm just trying to make a boats shoot at each other movie.
No, it's true. It's just that then again, like, why are we spending so much time doing alien tech? Yeah. Anyway, I guess briefly about the direction before we go into characters and actors, just anything anyone wants to say about Peter Berg's direction in this movie?
There's a lot of shots of those yellow canisters looking
so shots of them breaking up and then like raining down on a ship, and a lot of like shots of them like lodging.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird to me that they go flipping through the air whenever they fire them instead of just coming, like, because you feel like there's a 50-50 chance it's going to hit the side of the missile and then it won't be able to embed itself in the ship.
Right.
So like it'll just be lying there on the deck or something. Wouldn't it make more sense just to shoot it peg forward at the ship?
You would think
have it go in a straight line and then embed itself? Why am I telling you how to direct things, Peter? I don't think that I've ever seen any other Peter Berg movies, but it does this to me direction-wise. This feels very Michael Bay coded in terms of
extremely
the aesthetics of it. It's a little less orange and blue than Michael Bay.
Although there's some scenes.
No, there is. Brooklyn Decker doesn't have orange tanned skin.
That's true.
She looks more or less like a normal person would.
Mm.
It is mostly Michael Bay. I think there's like a soupçon of Roland Emmerich.
Right. I think the Roland Emmerich thing is just because so much of this feels like it's ripping off Independence Day.
Yeah.
In terms of what it's doing.
It's doing a thing that also Michael Bay does, which is like there's a kajillion characters. Right. A lot of them are, if not a full-on household name celebrity, yeah. It's at least a character actor you've seen in something else.
Sure.
There's also a lot of shots of going inside the, like, launching mechanisms.
Yes.
And then it's like, ooh, it's coming out.
Right, right. Ooh.
Or, like, because we see those, again, those
the tech
shredder
ball.
Drones
yeah.
get built a lot.
Right.
Constructed as
right, you see, like, out. She comes as a little ball, and then they keep slapping shit on the side, and then that's that little tail chain thingy.
I feel like they maybe shredder even drones. Repeated a shot of it.
It's got me. Lee, they spent a lot of money on that shot. They're going to use it to get it again. I don't know a whole lot about Peter Berg as a person. The one thing I do know about him is that, one, he loves the military.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. If you have ever seen any interview with him, that's definitely a thing that comes up with him, to the point that it's a little much, some might say.
It's similar to David Ayer's being so obsessed with the police. It's,
yes.
Well, there's like a whole scene of like the old boat.
Yeah.
It's just like a love letter to like,
right, no, that's,
I love our servicemen.
Right, no, that's very much like, sir, like I love you, sir.
We've given you so much.
Right,
to our
right.
I'm kind of two minds about this, because on the one hand, it was a lot that there was like, two or three slow-mo look at these bad boys walking up to the camera kind of deal on that older ship on the Missouri.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do kind of weirdly appreciate that he wanted to include actual veterans in this to the point where one of the minor supporting characters in
the Brooklyn
Hamish Linklater Brooklyn Decker subplot, I didn't look this up to confirm it, but that's just because I feel very confident about this. He was almost certainly
an actual soldier who lost his legs.
Yeah. Just because he wasn't bad per se, but he does not give action.
No, I mean, again, his character's not asked to do a whole lot of emotional...
Yeah.
But it's like, so on the one hand, I'm like, that is kind of cool that you were including these non-actors. But on the other hand, especially with the Missouri stuff, it's so fawning, it's so over the top, it really slows things down.
Yeah, no, it's very much a lot of like, God bless you, sirs. Like, just that total navel-gazing you get from certain people.
Navel-gazing?
Yeah.
Good work.
Yeah, I mean, like, just when you see the first shots of them on the Missouri, and there are like these old guys. Right, you see like these old guys just standing
like
on the top
specters.
Of the boat. Right, you are just like, what are you doing here? Yeah. Like, do you guys live here? Were you summoned here?
For a second, it's like, are they wax figurines?
Are they ghosts?
Yeah. What was I gonna say? What did you guys think about trying to make naval combat as exciting as possible with maneuvers like drop the anchor and then we're gonna drift the ship?
Oh,
like
it's... I mean,
so I don't hate that in theory.
Yeah.
I did look into this because I was just curious, and most people online say, like, if you did that, you would just rip out the anchor.
Yeah,
like, the anchor wouldn't do that, obviously.
Well,
yeah, spoiler alert, boat heavy.
Especially when you're
an anchor.
Yes. Yeah. Anchor heavy, boat heavier.
Boat win.
Well, especially if you're, like, you're using it to try to stop short and, like, do, like,
swing around.
A crazy swing turn.
Right.
Yeah.
It's almost like they were trying to apply Fast and the Furious rules.
Right.
To large armed ships.
I feel like that is sort of, like, the two sides of this battleship coin, right? On the one hand, it's sort of, we want to be very faithful to the military and like be very accurate in terms of lingo and what people would do on the boat. But also it's going to be a goofy movie where you can swing around on the anchor to make sure that you, you know, are positioning yourself
dodge
very
shots.
Suddenly. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry,
like a World War II battleship cannot like, you know, adroitly dodge.
No. And also I looked into this too, just because I figured this was the case, but I wanted to be sure. It takes a long ass time for a steam operated boat
course.
To heat up
of course.
To the point that it could leave. And they're basically just like, all right, it's on. Let's go.
At one point, he's like, oh no, just throw it in reverse. And they somehow
and immediately he's like, starts going backward, like, no. Again, not how boats work.
I'm pretty sure that would take a very long time.
Right.
I kind of feel like, frankly, making this movie is almost a no-win scenario. Because I think if you made this as realistic as humanly possible, and you had them do only maneuvers that the real U.S. Navy, mm-hmm. or Japanese Navy for that matter, do, I'm going to bet you that's not interesting. I'm
going
to bet you
sure.
that is really not that entertaining or fun to watch. So I understand
you
need to
do other
stuff.
You're right. I'm not calling this shit out because I'm saying it's bad and it shouldn't be in there.
I get you.
I'm just saying that it's the antithesis of what else they're doing.
I just don't think they thought about how that would look together.
Yeah. No.
And I kind of feel like they could have pulled back a little bit on the, like, thank you for your service, sir, verisimilitude shit.
Yeah.
Because it would make those other times feel a little less silly.
Right.
But I also just think Peter Berg had no idea what tone of movie this was. When the movie starts, we get a whole sequence with Taylor Kitsch breaking into the 7-Eleven and falling.
Yeah, right. Oh my god, right. How far we came.
I know, right? If you look at that scene and then look at the scene
it
with
is a different movie.
Right, with the World War II veterans on the boat, it is night and day between the two. And to be fair, I think if I had to pick one, I like the goofy Pink Panther convenience store robbery scene. Because when I first saw that, when I first saw it the first time, I was like, oh, this is fun. Maybe this movie will be fun. To which it quickly said, no, no, don't worry. So, this movie won't be fun.
It's like, the beginning is like, ooh, this is going to be a comedy about this larger-than-life, devil-may-care, absolute fuck-up character who's, yeah, like, supermodel 10 out of 10 right, gorgeous. But he's going to, like, get himself into these ridiculous hijinks. And then, basically, as soon as the boat's in the water, it is all seriousness, all the time. There's a little bit, there's a couple of moments of levity,
right?
Like, I feel like some of Jesse Plemons' lines are supposed to be kind of funny.
Right, I think Plemons, you know, kind of is funny.
Do you know what this movie would have been if that was the case?
Hmm.
If we stayed in there?
Yeah.
Maybe
would it
the
be like
whole
down
game?
Periscope or something?
No, the whole movie would have been like in a sort of naval training thing. Like
right, like a Stripes on the,
yeah,
like the first
just
part of Stripes.
It would be Stripes,
yeah,
but right, Navy, and
yeah,
there would be like a sort of semi-middling crisis that they sort of have to do.
Right, a very mild, not world-ending
congratulations
stakes.
You sort of you dissolve
well,
the thing
right
because
right,
that allows the stakes to not get so high, not like literally the world is going to get destroyed,
yeah,
and it also gives room if you wanted to continue that comedic tone,
yeah,
yeah,
it and just wraps up immediately.
If it's,
yeah,
Navy, if it's training in war games and you're doing like officer training, what a better way to get into the sort of battlefield style mechanics where it's how are you planning where to attack and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
And having a limited field of engagement. That would
right,
make
and
sense
it also, and also like if it's games, you can be like, hypothetical scenario, your radar is out. What do you do now? Or something
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah,
that. Like you can do pretty much anything from the hypothetical safety of a war game.
Just one other bit I just want to point out from the beginning that mm-hmm, I just can't believe it's in the same movie as the rest of it. Brooklyn Docker just wanted that chicken burrito, you guys.
Baby hungry.
So not only does he break into the 7-Eleven like we were just talking about, but then there's this ridiculously drawn out scene of him being pursued by two cops. He gets hit by one taser, goes down, is stumbling back up, hands her the chicken burrito,
yeah,
and then gets slammed
and also,
by another
the cop
taser.
Is like, he's getting back up!
He's standing back up, yeah,
like,
as if it's like a miracle.
Right, like it's like the fucking Incredible Hulk
so,
standing back up or
when
something.
When I first see that, my first reaction was, oh, this is an intentionally funny.
Right, this is a silly moment and the movie knows
moment.
It's being silly.
But the rest of the movie has me thinking, no, I don't
yeah,
think it did. I think that was supposed to show us he's, like, recklessly devoted to the people.
I mean, I truly don't know. It almost just feels like that scene is reflective of Taylor Kitsch's character, who's a kind of goof-off and doesn't care about things.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, I think we should go into characters to get into wrapping this up. But if we're talking about, like, Taylor Kitsch as a character, he goes from this sort of goofball who breaks into a convenience store to almost immediately being an exemplary naval officer, except that sometimes he's late and he doesn't play nicely with Japan when they play soccer.
The one time that they kind of complicate that is when he's like, we're gonna go full attack,
right, yes,
and everyone
yeah,
around him is like,
no,
I don't know about
right,
that
yeah, sorry, that's a bad idea, and he's like, nope, we're doing it anyway, and everyone's like, hey, stop it, and he keeps going, no,
you are absolutely correct. Beyond that point, he's like the most amazing
right character. And even at that point, I think we're led to believe that he's doing that because he's racked with grief about his brother dying, which is the only scene we really get aside from that one brief moment later
emotion.
On right, there's a brief moment later on of him in his bunk or something, sitting there with his head in his hands. Beast comes in and is like, sir, like, you have to come see the alien we pulled out of the water. And that's really about it. It is insane how quickly he goes from being goofball to like pretty good officer to very competent officer to the point that, you know, no one's really questioning his decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But even when he's making incredibly dumb decisions, like that one time, everyone is still like, don't do the thing, don't do the thing. But that's the only time that it seems like he's making a poor choice, frankly.
You know, I already got the gold star for Tokyo drifting that boat.
From a teacher. The
yeah,
teacher gave him a gold star.
Jesus Christ, the gold star.
Anything to say about Taylor Kitsch in this movie?
I kind of feel like I'm going to say the same thing about a lot of these actors. He's fine.
Yeah.
This is a movie where it's almost like the script didn't matter at all.
Right.
Although I really struggle to understand really what this movie was for, aside from just showing you different real military
maneuvers
and,
yeah,
and boats and whatnot.
Yeah.
But he does what he has.
Right. I would say like it's a perfectly adequate performance. It's giving you nothing more than
it's
the
like
script gives you.
Factory standard action hero
right,
kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. It's kind of a boring role. So there's really nothing
yeah,
here.
Because especially once Sarsgaard is dead.
Right. I think it's once he stops being the goofball character, there's nothing to his character.
At all.
Right. He becomes less fun because it's like, this is not the same guy I saw break into the ceiling of a convenience store, steal a burrito, and then try and sneak back out through the roof of a convenience store.
Yeah.
That would be one thing. If it was this guy this entire movie, and then maybe end of act two, his brother dies, and that's when he's like, oh shit, I have to sort of stop being such a goofball and accept some responsibility, some route one bullshit, but it would be something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
It would be more than nothing.
Because as it stands now, his character arc is kind of confusing to me in so much as there is one. Skarsgård, not much to say, comes in, dies.
He doesn't grow because he is a complete character.
Right, yeah, right. Yes. He's all fully realized,
and
pretty much.
Yeah. In the eyes of the movie, he's perfect as a human.
Yeah, he's just there to be like a role model.
Yeah, and like, I guess like a sacrificial lion.
Yeah.
Because his death is clearly supposed to motivate Taylor Kitsch. I guess I'll just be thankful it didn't kill off the girlfriend.
Yeah, no, right.
Yeah.
Rihanna as Rakes.
Fine.
Yeah, fine. She won a Razzie for this, which is kind of bullshit, I think.
She is no worse than anyone else.
No, and it's one of those times where I think the Razzies sees like a musician acting and is like,
I don't even know why you would single her out.
No.
She doesn't do that much in the movie?
No, I mean, the only thing I think that is weird is it seems like there is a scene where they kind of let Rihanna improv. Maybe that's not Rihanna's strong suit, which is fine. Not everyone can do it. It's the scene where she's talking with Jesse Plemons, and Jesse Plemons...
He's going like, good eye.
There is that scene. I think it's right after that scene where she calls him chicken. And he's like, okay, maybe I am chicken. And she says something like, you kind of look like Colonel Sanders. And that feels like something that they just let her say on the day. Because he doesn't look like Colonel Sanders. He's a white guy. And that's about where the similarity ends. That's the one moment where it's just kind of like, okay, like you let Rihanna have some fun when the camera was turned on. And then you kind of unwisely decided to keep it in the movie.
Yeah.
But aside from that, she's just doing what she's asked to do.
Yeah.
Which is to say she's like Vasquez from Aliens, but worse, pretty much.
I mean, much less of a character.
Yeah, much less interesting.
Vasquez, I became obsessed with immediately, and that's no offense to Rihanna. There's not much character there. There's not much character anywhere in this movie.
Right. I mean, Brooklyn,
everyone's sort of just a cog in the plot.
Yeah, Brooklyn Decker.
Speak for yourself. We got Nagato, and
that's true.
I feel like there's nothing to say about Brooklyn Decker. Really, she's just kind of there to look hot. She does fine.
She's boobs.
Fine. Yeah. She boobs. She hair. God, I don't know how if I'm going to say his name correctly. Tadanobu Asano is
who plays Asano.
Right. Okay. Who plays Nagata, who I think is a lot of fun in this.
He's a lot of fun. I also think he's the only one, in my opinion, who's, like, really giving me a performance.
I agree.
Like, he's making choices.
Yeah.
He's emoting.
Yeah.
It's not, like, setting the world on fire because he's surrounded by a lot of trash, but he's the only one I think was, like, acting.
Yeah.
It's great work.
I like what he's bringing.
He gives us the main battleship mechanic of the movie.
Right.
Yes, he does.
Yes.
Yeah.
He is the one to ultimately figure out the thing that does help, like, win the day, basically.
Yeah. Right.
And that's where we get the ship bait from.
That's true.
That is true.
Where they take a picture.
Where their arms around each other, and as viewers, I'm like,
Well, no, then somebody says, like, you guys make a cute couple.
Yeah.
Rihanna does.
Yes,
and I'm another improv.
And I'm like,
Rihanna, she's like getting them in a picture together, right?
She's onto something here. They do make a cute couple.
Oh, hello.
Clemens, I think, is also kind of giving a performance.
He is.
I would say.
He's much more limited.
Right. He's not offered a lot, but I think he pops, and I see why Jesse Plemons has gone on to better things.
Plemons gets to be funnier than basically anyone else in this movie.
And even if Hamish Linklater is playing a completely stupid character on paper, I think he's trying to give it some personality.
Yes.
So, and I generally liked Hamish Linklater in most things.
Mm-hmm.
I think his performance is kind of fun. I like at the end of the movie when you see when Liam Neeson is handing out stickers to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You see him. You see him in the audience, and he's one wearing sandals, and two,
he's shaking
his leg the entire time too, like he was earlier. You know what, Hamish Linklater? Good on you for being enough of an actor to be in that moment
to
be like,
physical.
Right, be like, this guy would be shaking his leg while sitting there watching this too. He's not going to appear big on screen, but you're going to see it.
Hamish Linklater does the work.
I think he's predominantly a theater actor, so I think he probably is bringing that same level of commitment.
I would love to hear anyone involved in that movie explain to me how he cast him for a character with the last name of Zapata, but that's okay.
Yeah, admittedly, I guess he has black curly hair, and that's all it takes. I think the last character you need to mention briefly is Admiral Shane, Liam Neeson, who is shockingly barely in this movie, which I did not expect. I sort of figured he was going to be
for more than a couple days.
I guess not. The one thing I have to say about this movie that really sunk it, ha ha ha, in my opinion, is that we didn't, I was hoping to God at the end of the movie, Liam Neeson would be like the last man standing on a ship that was sinking, captain goes down with the boat sort of thing. And it was just him sort of standing with his arms folded behind his back, gazing into the horizon as the ship sinks into the ocean. He just goes like, damn you aliens, you sunk my battleship. And he just like falls into the water as his hat floats or something like that. If it had had that, this movie would be 2 stars on Letterboxd just for that one scene.
Instead of half star?
I think it's half or one.
Liam Neeson isn't bad per se. Like I said, but when we were watching, I don't think he's really doing an American accent as much as he's just fighting his Irish accent.
Yeah, he's doing some strange accent work, and I can't make sense of what it is that he's trying to do or thinks he's doing.
You know who it's not a problem for?
Hmm.
Our boy Hamish Linklater. He sounded perfectly American.
Is he not American?
No, he's British?
It says here Welsh? He's an American actor.
I don't think he is.
Oh, I thought he was.
Oh. I think it's not a problem for Hamish Linklater because he is American.
I could have sworn up and down that he was.
Okay, I think you'd be swearing wrong, fine. Yeah.
Because I was like, oh, he's like Matthew Rhys and Toni Collette. They're just so good at it that you forget.
No, I don't think so. Anyways, having covered all of that, I think we should wrap it up with our fixes. I can go first. I just have a couple of notes because it's Battleship. What can I say?
What can we say?
What can one say about Battleship? Half-baked idea. One thing that I think is kind of interesting, like not super unique, but it's something in this movie is I like the idea that these aliens didn't just randomly invade us. They only invaded us because we sent a laser message to their planet. Mm-hmm. And we're like, hey, we're here. Hi, guys. And they're like, hey, planet.
Yeah.
And so they only invaded us because we were the ones who alerted them to our existence in the first place.
Do you think this is in the same world as Congo? And those are the diamond
My lasers? Diamonds,
the,
yes.
The communication lasers?
It probably is. You should have seen Joe Don Baker sitting in an office somewhere being like, it's a good thing I sent someone else to get that diamond. So it's kind of a fun premise that we were being invaded only because we sent a note to the aliens being like, hey, come over and play. Mm-hmm. And they're like, haha, let's get you. That being said, I realize that is not the premise of a Battleship movie. That's just sort of the premise of an alien invasion movie and just the start of one. So I think what I would just do if I had to make a Battleship movie is I would probably rip off the plot to The Rock more aggressively. I think it should be about some lunatic ex-military guy who has an axe to grind. I don't know if it's a legitimate axe to grind or not. It doesn't really matter to me. You could go either way, whatever. He's commandeered a fleet of ships with his crew of zealots and is threatening to bomb DC or another country and start mm-hmm. a war, or like, who cares? But he's threatening to do something bad with this unless his demands, whatever they are met. And so you've got a covert squad of Navy pros who are sent with some ships of their own to intercept them. Maybe this lunatic has some sort of advanced technology that knocks out their radar, so you can incorporate some of like that Battleship idea into it if you really wanted to do that, the whole, you know, yelling at numbers and letters on a grid sort of thing. I think it also might be fun, if we're just going nuts here, if you gave it sort of an 80s 90s action figure toyetic tone. Got a guy with robot arms, or you got a guy with like a gun the size of them on a backpack or some shit like that. This is not a good idea, but it's an idea and it's fun, so why not go full out fucking nuts with this movie?
It feels like it would cross over with like G.I. Joe or something.
Yeah, probably. I mean, shit, why not, you know? I think the thing of it is, so I talked briefly about the idea that the aliens are here because America needs to be the underdog, and America can't portray itself as the underdog to another country, so you need to have an alien coming in. So the only way you could do it without aliens is if it's America versus America and not America versus another country. So that would be my thought. Instead of it being America versus X, it's just America versus an American guy who has commandeered some ships. Mm. So that's it.
I'm ready unless you wanted to start.
You can go.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
It needs to at least be referencing some way in that this being like a game or a simulation, at least more than this movie has done. This is going to be such a cheap twist. It's playing out like a very bog standard alien invasion story. However, the reveal is that this is all a simulation, that these human naval people who have been captured by the aliens have been placed into a simulation and are actually piloting the alien ships that are actually destroying American ships.
It's like a quasi-Ender's Game scenario.
Yeah! Ender's Game, but with like, oh, I thought we were destroying the aliens, but we're really destroying our own people?
Mm.
So that's all I got.
I have the Battleship pitch that is an instant Hasbro reject and nobody wants to see it but me.
Yep. Okay.
I think it's like a sort of modern day scenario. Countries are like going to be maybe nebulous in a similar way to like Top Gun Maverick.
Sure. We don't, it's a country, but we're not telling you what it is.
Yeah, but it's the US or something. And I think that there's some unknown country with a coast that
and mountains?
Has a situation happening.
Mm.
And that situation has caused them to form a naval blockade.
Okay.
But there is something within the country that like the US intelligence or something needs to obtain. Mm-hmm. Their best plan is to sneak through the naval blockade. So they get like one sort of like limber, smallish ship that they send that's going to try to like sneak past, and it's got maybe some ability to like scramble radar or like not be seen on radar, and their best hope is to just dive between raindrops or whatever. And this is where I want it to sort of feel like maybe there have been relations diplomatic between these countries before, or like military games, such that like the military people involved are like on a very different level with each other than like the diplomatic people involved. Mm-hmm. Like the military people are like, we are in a different sphere where it's like we have our jobs and we're kind of chill with each other. Mm-hmm. And the diplomatic people are have their priorities and are on a very different level with their respective rivals in that country or whatever. Mm-hmm. The two relative people involved like know each other or whatever. The guy who is ever running this tiny ship operation and who's ever in charge of this naval blockade may have some sort of formal relationship or know each other. And I think I kind of want to reveal maybe like
an AO3 style former relationship.
Like an AO3, not an AO3, maybe. Certainly something that people are going
to I'll be writing the fic afterward. Yeah.
I don't know if I want it to be like halfway through the movie or all along or maybe not at all, but I kind of like the idea that like they have actually what's happening between the two leaders is that they are pretending to do their jobs in the sense that like they're collaborating together, but like mm-hmm. the guy in charge of the naval blockade has to walk this tightrope of like pretending to find and shoot this ship down, but also not actually shoot the ship sure. down. And it's this like really tense situation because it's like he has to convincingly play this role, but there's like no way for them really to communicate. There's like only some, there's like maybe some weird archaic way for them to send messages back and forth, but they can't do it obviously because while they're trying to like get this done. But I think it's either something of like, it could be that there's like a double agent thing happening where whatever needs to leave this country is what the military wants, or it's good for that person individually. Mm. But I just like the idea that it's this like tense thriller type situation where the ship is just, its job for the ship is to like sneak past all of the defenses. And only the leader of the other side is the one that's trying to make sure that this actually happens. But you don't know that from the start. It's something you kind of find out halfway through. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the leader finds out who it is or like why they're doing it or what they're after, and then suddenly it becomes like, oh, I actually need this to work.
Mm, yeah.
And I have to like pretend like maybe the guy in the small ship is able to communicate, we're here for the, what is the thing called in the movie when you want
MacGuffin.
Yeah. And they're like, oh shit, the MacGuffin. We gotta let this guy through, but I can't let anyone know that I'm slacking off, so right. I have to like try to shoot you down, so we have to find a way to coordinate and make it look like and like not actually sucking at my job.
Uh-huh. Yes,
it's really not at all like Battleship. It's the kind of movie I want to tell.
Yeah, why not though?
I like it.
Would either of you guys recommend this movie?
No,
absolutely not.
Way too long.
It is so long. It's not even dumb fun. It's just dumb.
At one point we paused, someone had to get up, and it was shortly after the aliens had finally arrived.
Right.
And it was nearly 50 minutes into the movie.
I think at what point did they actually start playing Battleship is even later than that. It's like 80 minutes into the movie or something, where it's that now we're finally getting into the Battleship part of your Battleship movie.
And it's not like the wind-up was fun. It's just repetitive.
You're right, yeah. Exactly.
Seeing a lot of cans
right. If you
go into a boat and explode. Yeah.
If you could have trimmed this down to 100 minutes or so, perfect. I would say it would be okay.
Yep.
But it's not. Guys, Summer Games, it's over. Except for a mini episode afterward, we'll be talking a little bit about something else game related that we'll be covering in 2 weeks from now. Drabpack.com is our website. All the episodes are there. They're also on all the standard podcasting apps. You can listen to them there as well. And we buy it out. Bye!